The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
First of all, it's a good morning to Conor Faulkner, transport commentator and consultant to the RIAC. Good morning, Conor.
Good morning, Pat. Hi.
Lots of transport news today, yeah. But let's start with Metrolink.
Well, it goes back into public consultation. The long, long saga continues. So it's back in the news today because the public consultation process was supposed to have been finished in March.
What changed?
Well, at the last minute, TII introduced, I believe it's 200 additional documents, bits and pieces about the route and the plan, etc. And other parties to the public consultation said, hey, this is fresh information. We needed time to consider it. So then TII resolved to republicise, ask for public consultation again, allow people who had already submitted to submit again. So the damn thing is delayed again. It's a ridiculous.
Now we saw the embarrassment they had when it was discovered the last time this planning inquiry was held in public. There were buildings they thought were somewhere, and those buildings had either changed or simply were not there at all.
Yeah, lots of the detail was not precise enough for the public consultation process. And I suppose in fairness, and this is the Irish malaise, if you are one of the property owners, you know, you want to be pretty clear on the specifics before.
It appears in Earlsford Terrace, for example, there was a basement in a building which had been replaced. There was always, well, in the last decades, a significant office building there. It was completely redone, including the creation of a two-story basement or three-story basement, which it turns out TI did not appear to know about.
Yeah, but again, you can get deep into the weeds on this. I mean, this is an 18, 19 kilometre rail line. It's a major urban project. They do it in other cities and they cope with these complications. When we built Lewis, for example, there was issues with basements all along Harcourt Street. When we start building Metro, lots and lots of stuff will be discovered in construction. But it can't, you know, every time we identify an issue like this, we haven't swung a hammer yet. Every time we identify issues like this, we can't delay the entire project. I mean, the Dublin Metro project has been national policy since the year 2000. Mary O'Rourke announced it. And, you know, 25 years on, we haven't made any progress.
Now, can we compare ourselves to other cities, you know, who've around the same timescale decided we need to build a metro line?
Well, there are great examples around Europe. You can look at what Madrid did, and they built additional metro lines in the 90s and into the early 2000s. They built three additional lines with astonishing speed. The world was looking. They did it incredibly quickly. But I think a good example also is Athens. And I was in Athens recently. And look, it's a great city in many ways. But
we'll be talking about how it's threatened by fire in a few minutes' time.
Yeah.
The sensitive archaeology of Athens.
And, you know, they're not worried about a couple of bases. On Harcourt Street, they're discovering sort of fabulous archaeology as they built two modern, superb quality lines connecting their airport with the stuff they discovered along the way. They've made marvellous urban spaces displaying the art, etc. It's a terrific modern system and it's full all the time. It works absolutely brilliantly. They had to do it because their pollution and congestion was so bad 20 years ago in Athens. Now, Dublin was in the same situation, decided to do the same thing. We haven't built anything. It's still 10 years away. And partly it's our frustratingly slow planning process. And it does feel as if it's stacked in favour of the objectors. All you have to do is put your hand up and say, I have a concern. And while your concern is thrashed out, nothing moves forward with the project. So here we are 15 years after announcement, and we're still going back into a fresh round of the public consultation phase. We want to do this. We want to build it. Why can't we get on and do it?
Now, we are determined to build something to the airport. And although there are people, Colin McCarthy, for example, would say, look, you have the port tunnel, you've got buses, they're easy to deploy, they don't require tracks or overhead lines or anything like that. Let's stick with that.
Yeah, and I think that's a really poor idea. I mean, buses are not a long-term solution, and I wish the city and the state could get their head around that. Things like bus connects instead of a metro is just a busted policy. And I appreciate where Colin McCarthy is coming from, and he'll always talk to you. You should read him on Irish Rail. He's very, very dismissive of it. But look, for an urban setting, I think he's fundamentally wrong. Cities of 2 million with a busy airport that's over 20 million, you've got to have a realistic, reliable connection to the city centre, and that means rail. It's the only game in town. Also, wherever metros are built, they tend to generate lots of economic activity. Look at the Lewis lines that we built. I mean, nobody will look back on those now and say they're in any sense a failure. I mean, they have been magnificent successes wherever we've built them. And Metro will be the same. Nobody's against building it. Everybody says in principle we need one. But the process rolls on and rolls on for years. It has incidentally doubled in price since Mary O'Rourke's costing.
Now, there was an offer from the company that built the Madrid Metro to us after the crash, and we had no money. But there was no vision either, it would appear, at that stage to say, OK, let's go to the European Investment Bank and get the money and do it.
Yeah, now those were different times and all investment crashed post-crash. And I think we'd missed an opportunity.
But I mean, we had the opportunity to keep our construction workers in Ireland if you embark on a massive project like that.
But then,
of course, the Madrid guys say, we'll come in and do it. And then they look at our planning process and say, well, when do we start?
Well, when do we start? And the answer to that, you know, cannot be less than 2 to 3 years minimum. And that's just unrealistic. We have to be more responsive and more capable than that. And whenever we do build projects, we can do them well. I know you might throw Children's Hospital into the conversation.
Of course.
We are capable of doing mega projects. And if you look at the Lewis or the Dublin Port Tunnel as a great example, there were all sorts of rows about that. And it was a very, very difficult project. And we were delayed in starting it. But once it got going, the outturn cost, I think, was €750 million, looked like a fortune at the time. As the years go by, that looks cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So the best time to build Metro was 25 years ago.
With all this planning, and we have a planning process which is very comprehensive and supposed to give the rights to everybody, those who want to build and those who want to object. So eventually you get a very good planning decision. That's the theory. However, the Children's Hospital won't open probably until 2026. At the same time, in Atlanta, they have designed and built a hospital which is opening this year at a lower cost, more beds, 20 acres of green space, thousands of parking spaces for staff and patients. Come on.
Our planning process is flawed. Our planning process is entirely flawed. And it's, you know, democratically, you know, in a very socially protective way, stacked in favour of anybody for any reason who wants to put their hands up and say, I object. And while it's, you have to facilitate objections, you cannot allow them to delay massive capital projects.
But the planning board, it looks at what's in front of it. I remember at the time of the Children's Hospital, Leo Varadkar, when he was Minister for Health, told me, we will be lodging a planning application for both maternity and children on the St. James site at the same time. But of course, the design of the Children's Hospital was to go up. It was decided by planners, no, it can't be that high. What happens when you want to cram the same amount of square meterage into a space? You've got to spread the footprint. Now there's no room for the maternity hospital. So the whole business of tri-location. So where does the blame lie for that?
Well, exactly. And, you know, to some degree, we allow perfect to be the enemy of good. So, you know, we have to have every contingency worked out and every detail figured.
Does the planning authority have the right to say, you're thinking of building a children's hospital there? I'm sorry, we're looking at overall planning. So it shouldn't be there. It should be somewhere else. But it appears they don't have that power. All they can do is look at the application in front of them and see whether it adheres to planning rules.
You know, no more than when we go down constitutional arguments about drink driving stops, etc. Lawyers get involved and it gets very, very difficult. One thing I think is interesting about the Spanish example, Barcelona for the 1992 Olympics, I think as it was, and Madrid, we said, built its metro. They were actually enabled, funnily enough, by some Franco-era planning laws that gave central government, you know, what we would almost consider like quasi-fascist powers. But you know what? It meant they were able to do it. And if you look at the job that was done of urban reconstruction on the seafront in Barcelona, which many, many people will know, it's over-touristed now, which is a different problem. But it used to be a disaster. And the Metro and their Olympics became a fantastic boon to the city and project of urban renewal. And if we had built a Metro in Dublin City 20, 25 years ago, I'm absolutely certain we wouldn't be regretting it now. We'd be building extensions as they're doing in places like Athens and Madrid and others.
A couple of comments here. The port tunnel took longer than necessary because they weren't allowed to drill at night.
that was part of it. And so construction was a little slower. And that was one of the frustrations that we had at the time. Do you know what, though? When they started construction, they still got through that project kind of on timeline. And it was very well managed. And the long
because
history
they were
to that,
burrowing but, away underground, not disturbing many people on the surface.
And, you know, you're almost sorry you just didn't keep that tunnel boring machine going. Keep it going, you know.
Well, they buried it in the tunnel.
They buried it in the tunnel. You know, if they kept it going, it would have, you know, come up in Sandyford by now. We'd have an eastern bypass and plenty of capacity, as those tunnelling experts told the city at the time. Perfectly possible in engineering terms to do metro for Dublin. An easier project than Athens, for sure. But we didn't do it. And, you know, we should have done it then. We should be doing it now.
Question from a listener. Why can't we simply build a rail spur between the airport and nearby Clongriffin railway station, which runs to the capital?
Well, that's been proposed as well, and I don't care if we do it at the same time or as well. A better solution.
If you've got a short run between Clongriffin and the airport, I don't know how long that run is. Mm. And whether it's in open fields or whether you'd have to tunnel there as well.
If that was your only option, it would be better than nothing. But the better solution is to build the damn metro, which, you know, it starts at the airport currently. But we can envisage it'll come from, you know, Swords or beyond through to Stephen's Green, where it'll connect to other metros. This will be the future of Dublin City. I mean, we're planning on the city being around, I presume, for more than sort of a 20-year investment horizon. Dublin's going to be here for centuries to come. And we certainly are going to need a modern metro system, as other European cities of our size know and have done, while we've been doing nothing. We've been talking about planning and processes.
But isn't it also true that we changed our minds about the metro time and again as to where it might come from and where it might be?
Yeah, and everybody has an opinion.
One of the ideas is that it links up some way with the Lewis coming from Sandyford, and therefore the station has to be in Ranelagh, which may not be the appropriate place at all.
There's a huge argument between Stephen's Green and Charlemagne Street and what's the ideal location for a station there. But again, you know, letting perfect be the enemy of good. We can't allow that conversation, important as it is, to be another reason to delay for another 2 years before we first start swinging a hammer. We have to get on with it.
Another one says, so as not to heap more pressure on Dublin and airport routes, the third runway must not go ahead. There's no proposal for a third runway.
Not that I'm aware of. No.
But I mean, maybe the third terminal might be.
But Dublin Airport is enormous, though, and it is the island's airport. It's used by Belfast and everyone, so it's bigger than the city in a sense.
Paddy in Termonfeckin says it would make more sense to build an airport in Athlone.
Well, if you were starting again, what is to say? You know, you have to play the hand you're dealt. The existing infrastructure is already in place.
Forget the metro, extend Lewis to Blanchardstown, start a double-decker train from Baldoyle through the airport around to Stepaside, taking thousands of car journeys off the M50 every day.
Well, I mean, extend the Lewis, certainly. As I say, we don't put in infrastructure and regret it. There have been a couple of modest extensions to the Lewis since it was originally built. There was supposed to be, you know, the northern route to the airport was supposed to be a northern Lewis at one stage as well. And look, it's not exclusively Dublin. Cork, Galway, they could do it, Lewis's too.
The airport is only one of the stops. A huge cohort of people in Drumcondra, Glasnevin, Santry, Whitehall, Ballymun, Swords, all to be serviced by the proposed metro. Therefore, a huge number of cars off the road.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you're in a city like Athens or other European cities, you don't need to use a car. It never occurs to you. You think, I'll use their metro system. It's great.
Here we go again. 20 plus years, the outer bypass was announced for Galway and we're still waiting for it. It'll probably never be built because it's not Dublin. That's from a fed-up bus driver in Galway City.
Yeah, well, you know, it can feel like that if you're not in Dublin, because most of our conversation this morning has been about it. But you could have a similar conversation about other cities for sure. You know, Galway's been underinvested and has traffic congestion that is absolutely ludicrous for a city of its relatively modest size.
Also, they built a lot of roads around Galway, not the bypass they're looking for. And they don't seem to have improved things at all. Big wide roads, junctions, traffic lights here, there and yon. And still trying to get through Galway without going into the city centre and get out to Connemara is a chore.
I know, it really is. And, you know, that plays into an older argument where, you know, people will tell you if you build roads, they will just fill up with traffic. That's all you've achieved. And if all you're doing is building roads, that is undoubtedly the case. And in cities, you know, it's good quality urban public transport is really what everybody wants. Mm.
I lived in Warsaw, left there in 2012. They had one underground line. Mm. I went back in 2019. They now have a second underground line that goes around across the city, fully functional. It was built within a matter of years and goes under the river.
Yeah, so there are lots and lots of examples. In Prague, they have the old system, three lines that intersect as a triangle in the city centre. A bit rickety and old, but works really, really well. Some of the French cities, Nice has built a fantastic line connecting its airport. It's something between a metro and a Lewis, but you know what? It works brilliantly. It's full all the time. And when all of this is going on, you know, Grenoble, Montpellier, while all of this is going on, Dublin's projects have not got further than a flip chart. And we're talking about buses instead. It drives me mad.
In relation to the metro, in very basic terms, we need a north-south-east-west line and a circle line around the M50 to interconnect with the surrounding towns and villages and build around that. Building this out to commuter towns like Naas, Blessington and Navan would also solve the housing problem by opening up the green belt of development land and commutable to the city. Also, average spend around the rest of the world is approximately 400 million euro per mile. We need to keep in line with the rest of the world in terms of costs. At the moment, the government have costs well above global and European averages for metro building.
Yeah, they do. And a huge chunk of that is the land acquisition and legal costs, etc., that go with it, which is very, very complicated in Ireland, which we can say is terrible. But, you know, until it's my house, then I care about it a lot.
We are trying to keep everybody happy here in Ireland, getting nothing done. It's a disaster. And that's probably a good summary.
Yeah, that's a good summary. And we cannot continue like this because, you know, we know we're strangling for want of housing and various other things where planning has failed us. And Metro is just a glaring example.
Yeah, we will be talking about the affordability gap for first-time buyers later on in the programme in terms of housing. But there are a couple of other stories knocking around today.
Yeah.
The Daily Mail is looking at the statistics for fatalities and non-seatbelt wearing.
Yeah, and it's an interesting story. That what they've said as a headline is that one in four drivers who are killed in car crashes were not wearing their seatbelt. Now, that's over a 10-year data set. But that's a very high number because seatbelt wearing rates in Ireland, you know, went on a journey, but were actually pretty good. So in the front of a car, passenger or driver, seatbelt wearing rates typically are in the high 90s, over 95%, as good as most countries in Europe. A little worse in the back. Does it tell you, can we rely on the data? But it does tell you that, you know, people who die are hugely overrepresented statistically. So put your belt on. It's a good statistical proof of it. They'll turn fatal crashes into serious injuries. You still don't want to crash your car. But it seems extraordinary in this day and age that many drivers are not wearing their seatbelts. Mm. But maybe we need to sift the data.
Reading from Ashley Maloney's story, she says, the number of drivers who died in crashes who were not wearing seatbelts in a seatbelt-equipped vehicle, because you can't wear it if it doesn't. Yeah, most
there are exceptions. But
has decreased from 23 in 2019 to 6 last year and 3 so far in 2024, and we're halfway through the year. So it's actually not the bad news story. It's actually relatively good news story.
Yeah, and you would think that seatbelts, which again is one of those older road safety conversations, historically, you know, trying to persuade people to put them on. Nowadays, a modern car will annoy you and beep at you, etc. And it's much more socially normal. It's rare to see somebody without a seatbelt these days, and obviously dangerous.
Lived in Berlin for 5 years, 26 kilometres from the office, 40 minutes by public transport. It would take 60 to 90 minutes by car. Also, everybody used public transport, from cleaners to board members. No snobbery about public transport at all.
Yeah, and there isn't here either. If you look at the Lewis lines, for example, you know, if it's good quality.
Do you think there's a bit of snobbery, like the Dart is more acceptable than the bus, the Lewis more acceptable than the bus?
Yeah, you know, I've never bought into that, to be honest with you. Even when things like the Storgen quality bus corridor opened back in the day, it turns out that if it's good quality, reliable, if you can trust the time and the timetable, people use it.
Have Bus Auclair come to terms with the vanishing buses that appear on those electronic digital boards and then don't appear?
You know, Dublin Bus, the story in itself, huge improvements in the service in the last few years. In a lot of locations in Dublin, a really good service being provided, but still that problem with ghost buses. We've the 15 bus. If I use it, you know, if our house uses it to get to work every day, it's a brilliant, reliable service, and you'll be late for work two or three times a month because a bus won't show. And, you know, that's just not good enough, I'm afraid.
It is not, particularly when they all have transponders. So they, in theory, know exactly where every single bus is.
Yeah, in theory. And you know, the person standing at the bus stop will just look at the sign and see the bus disappear. It happens too often. In what is a very good service, and the 90-minute fare is a great success, and the Leap card is working.
And then
well,
you see anomalies like the Lewis is arriving at its terminus in Cherrywood, and the bus leaves just before the Lewis pulls in.
Yeah, it's all a bit silly, isn't it? But look, in the context of a service being better than it is, I mean, I've said before that Bus Connects is no substitute for Metro, but it's still worth spending money on improving the bus service. And that is happening. And to be fair, there are results, some good results to be seen.
Pat and Connor, what, in your opinion, is the main reason that Metro hasn't happened? Is it cost? Is it political? Is it planning?
Well, cost in a sense that it was only in the Tiger era that we were able to do these things at all. And we built the motorway network in that era successfully. In fact, people criticised afterwards that all we did was build roads.
But there was a lot of public-private partnerships involved and tolling.
And toll schemes.
So therefore the economics of it did not entirely depend on the state.
Well, the tolling never added much to the economics. But nevertheless, we were able to
get it done. No, the public-private partnerships, the...
Yeah. We were also tended to be rolling through green fields or along pre-existing national primary routes, whereas, you know, Metro is much more complicated. A very complicated history for things like the Port Tunnel and the Lewis Lines, which went through planning torture, but we did get started and we did get done. So in the Tiger era, we were able to do that. Metro was a huge project. Then I guess the financial crash delayed it for a few years, and we only kick-started it again a number of years ago. But again, if we'd actually started at any stage during that past couple of decades, we'd be finished now.
Now, finally, we read that a safe driving program is to begin in secondary schools next month. RSA have designed this 10-module course for transition year.
Yeah, and look, this is a nice story, thankfully, and the RSA needs to get active on this front. And it's about bringing the road safety message to young people. It's a transition year module for schools, and they're rolling it out there. I think you have 11 vehicles that can operate on site, presumably engage with students and talk to them about safety on the roads, which is not just about driving a car, although obviously you think of it in those terms. But, you know, there are people who are killed because they're looking at a smartphone and they step out into traffic.
Two fatalities on scooters so far.
Fatalities on scooters are starting to turn up in our data as well. All sorts of reasons why a moment's lack of concentration. Roads are dangerous, and you know they'll still be dangerous when there's bikes, e-scooters and Lewis's. And you know, young people generally, all of us, but young people generally would benefit from just being street aware in that sense. So
all
good
right.
Programme.
We'll see how it rolls out. Maybe send one of our younger reporters to check it out in the classroom.
Yeah, feels like a job for Henry McKean, I think, doesn't it?
Maybe so. All right, Conor Faulkner, transport commentator and consultant to the RIAC. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.